Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Hello, I'm Henry Will. Welcome to Episode 9 of the PMLessonsLearned.com podcast. This is our conference call from the 22nd of March 2007 on the theme of managing expectations. Dina Scott, PMP, from the Controlling Chaos podcast joined us. So, let's listen into the call.
Hello, everyone. This is Henry Will, and welcome to the March 22nd, 2007 PMLessonsLearned.com conference call. I welcome you all to the call. I thank you for joining. Tonight's theme is going to be about managing expectations. Before I go into that topic, let me just give you an overview of the call. The goals of our group is to empower project managers and people studying for the PMP test. Hopefully, project managers will have a time to share their lessons learned on our calls and help others at the same time get their name recognized in the field. It's all about project managers helping project managers. This is an interactive call, so we invite you all to participate. That's what we're all about. Just to give you a little logistics about the call, this call is being recorded, and we make recordings of the call available via telephone, and also we're turning them into podcasts. If you would like to find out details about that, please join our Yahoo group via our webpage. Also, if you join the Yahoo group, you'll get reminders and other information coming from the group. While this call is free, I wanted to remind everybody that long-distance charges may apply, and I ask you to take the time to visit our PMLessonsLearned.com group website and take a look at that and see some of the things that we have to offer. We have a few exciting announcements to make this evening. We'll be getting to those in a couple of minutes. I wanted to remind everybody that because this is a conference call, I would like everyone to try to hold down their comments to about a 1 or 2 minute comment, and then just take a breather for a few seconds to let anyone else that has some comments to add get a chance to jump in the conversation. We like it to be interactive, and so we'd like everybody to be able to participate. Just to let everybody know, our next conference call is scheduled for April the 19th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and we are going to be polling everybody in the Yahoo group, asking them which topic they would like to have be the theme of the next call. We have several topics that have been suggested for our themes for our next call, and we're going to put a survey on the Yahoo site. So if you're not already a member, join the group, and you'll be able to take part in the poll. Just a quick overview of our agenda. We're going to be going directly into our lessons learned about our theme, managing expectations, and we'll have Q&A about that. We hope to have a career segment this evening. And then immediately following the recording of this conference call, when we stop the recording, usually we have a time of networking between the people that are on the call. As I mentioned before, the call is available via telephone, and that information will be sent out to the Yahoo group list after the call is over. So, this evening I have two great announcements to make. On the call we have David Radkovich, and I hope that I'm one of the first people, David, to congratulate you. I know you took the PMP exam today, and I think you're probably on this call tonight, you're probably the one that has the newest PMP certification, or at least passing of the test, of anybody that's on this call. I'd like to congratulate you on passing that test. Welcome, David.
Well, thank you, Henry. Appreciate that.
Yes, I'm really happy you passed and everything. That's really great news.
Okay. Yes, David. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to just introduce David a little bit, and then I'll let him make the other announcements, which is very exciting. I've known David for months now, and David has, as part of trying to get his PMP certification, started a study group not too far from where I live. And I visited his group at one time, and I've mentioned this on prior calls, and they grilled me about taking the PMP exam and how did I study and what were the benefits of certification and how much did I use the information I learned. It was a great meeting, and it really made me think, and I really enjoyed taking part with that class. And I've also been a part of their Yahoo group and contributed some ideas that I had to their learning. And they are exchanging ideas back and forth and spreadsheets and tools and all kinds of concepts about studying for the PMP exam. And I had asked David last month if we had time, if he could prepare some information for our call. And our call was so filled up with people sharing that we didn't have a chance. So I asked David if he would be interested in having an additional call between our monthly calls, if he would like to have a call just to talk about project management information, say in the beginning of April, just to have an extra call placed in there. And David came up with a really great idea. And David, I don't want to take away any of your thunder. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about it?
Well, thank you, Henry. What we've decided to do is try to have a call every month, 2 weeks opposite of Henry's call, and we're going to basically call it a PM's Lessons Learned study group. So it's for people that are trying to prepare for the PMP exam. We're going to have a topic. We're also going to take a great use of the PM's Lessons Learned website, where we'll post the presentation on that site. People can also get on that bulletin board and ask questions and that to, you know, prepare before the presentation. And our first presentation is going to be on April 5th. We're going to call it Preparing for the PMP Certifications, and we're going to talk about things like getting started, a little bit about PMI, and, you know, making sure that people really do want to do this. I want to talk a little bit about the PMBOK, how the, you know, PMBOK is kind of the what of project management, not the how. We're going to go over some recommended websites. There's a wealth of information out there for people that are studying for their PMP, and we want to talk about some of the great websites that are very, very useful. Talk a little bit about Rita McCulley's book, because that's such an integral part of studying for the exam, and so many people that have passed the exam like I have are going to highly recommend that book as one of the must-study guides. So want to talk about why we feel that way and a little bit about that book. Talk about starting a PMP study group. And then at the end, I'm going to do a little lessons learned about the test that I just took and some of the thoughts I have about helping people take a test. So that's going to be our first one. That's going to be April 5th. We're going to keep it on Thursdays at 9 o'clock. Kind of offset it from this call by 2 weeks. And then our second one, we're targeting May 3rd for that one. And we're going to talk about earned value management. So welcome any questions or any thoughts anybody that's on a call tonight might have about that.
That's a super, super announcement there, David. I'm so excited about it. The interactive aspect of the conference call in studying for the PMP exam should just be a wonderful combination. So just like David said, does anybody have any questions out there about the PMP exam?
Okay, we need a little bit more interactive than this.
David, I guess I'll ask you a question. How's that? I'll interview you. How have you found people that have been in your PMP exam prep group that you have that meets at the library? How have you found that people, have any of them taken any training classes, and how helpful have they found them?
One person right now is actually taking the prep course that the New Jersey PMI chapter offers, and she is saying that's a wonderful course, and she's very, very happy. I've personally taken a couple online PMP courses that I found useful, you know, I would grade them, you know, probably, you know, in the C area. Of course, the price wasn't very high, so, you know, you get what you pay for. So the one thing I find so useful about the study group is you get people's perspective. What we do in our study group is we kind of focus on the concepts, not trying to go into the input tools and techniques. Talk about some of the concepts in the key area. As an example, the last person that presented on quality assurance, and she had copied a whole bunch of different kind of charts and gave good examples of different charts. And the one type of chart that she actually presented and had a good example on, I know I saw two or three questions on the test on that particular chart. And so that really, really helped me. And that's the value, I think, of a study group.
Yes, David also mentioned just now about how the local chapter here in New Jersey offers a PMP exam prep class that goes over several weeks. I would like to encourage everybody on the call to be involved with their local PMI chapter. There's one in every location conveniently placed for you to make use of, and I would really highly suggest it. As a matter of fact, before we started recording the call, we have somebody on the call that actually it was George, and he was saying about how he was at the New Jersey PMI, the local chapter meeting the other night, and found that to be very helpful. Isn't that true, George? Maybe George is still on mute.
I'm here.
Yeah, didn't you find that you said remarkably very helpful?
The words I used was that I'm psyched every time I leave the meeting, and it's really great to be able to hear. I mean, world class people that are published. I truly enjoy going, and I have an hour's drive home back to Pennsylvania, and I'm scribbling ideas down that come to me and percolate to the surface from hearing the speaker.
I would agree with you there that they have some great topics, and a lot of I've also taken part in other PMI chapters, and I found that they have equally great programs for project managers. Of course, once you are PMP certified, you need to gain PDUs, professional development units, in order to keep your certification, and that needs to be 60 PDU credits every 3 years. So it's important to continue to learn as a project manager and to continue to invest your time in others, and in the local chapter, you can volunteer there as I do. And I'll tell you, one of the things, while I'm on the subject of PDUs, I guess I should tell everyone that I'm actually going to be involved in going to the Seminar at Sea, which is a 12 PDU seminar that's taking place on a cruise boat, the Carnival Ecstasy. It's sailing from Galveston, Texas, next week, March 29th to April the 2nd. And I'm going to be sailing to the Western Caribbean, to Cozumel. It's a four-day cruise. It's sponsored by the Clear Lake Galveston chapter and the PMI of Houston. And it's also, they're both co-hosting this. And at last count, there was 80 cabins that were reserved, 163 people that are registered for this. You get 12 PDUs for it. And there's also PMI chapters participating from Arkansas, Nevada, Charlotte, North Carolina, Buffalo, New York, Dallas, and Austin, Texas. And they've already started making plans for a cruise in 2008. This is the second one that they're doing this year. And it's been so successful, they're going to do one next year. So it's a great way to make some PDUs. And I, when I heard about it, I said, I'm going.
Oh, so Henry, I feel so bad for you having to get your 12 PDUs that way.
I know. Well, some of us have to suffer, Dina.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. And it's the first time I've been on a cruise, and they have it set up so that you spend your time in the courses while the ship is underway in the mornings, and then you get to spend the rest of the evenings on the boat taking part in all the fun activities, and you get the whole day to yourself once you reach your destination. They have a great schedule, and they have some really good speakers. If you want to take a look, if you're interested, just do a Google search for their website, and you'll find lots of information about it. And they're not the only ones that are considering this. From what I understand, there's other chapters across the country that are considering similar plans for cruises like this to gain PDU points. I think it's a great idea. Actually, I had looked around. I had a plane ticket that I had to use up, and my wife suggested to me, she says, you know, you've always wanted to go to one of those seminars someplace. Why don't you look around on the PMI website and see what you can find? And this was one of the ones that I felt as though had a great value and sounded like a whole lot of fun. And I'm really looking forward to going. I've already corresponded with some of the people down there. And it ends up that somebody that I know knows somebody that's in charge of this. So I can't wait to surprise them and tell them that we know somebody in common. David also mentioned about the bulletin board, the discussion board system that we have. You can get to it via the link on our homepage. And Michael, one of our members, has generously decided to give his time to set that up for us. I asked him just this morning if he could add some extra topics for the PMP study group that David is going to be working with. We're hoping to record those calls and make them available by podcast as well. So we got a lot of exciting things going on here. I also wanted to mention, too, that in the past month, we had somebody join us, Jeff Furman. He's a PMP instructor, and he's an author of several articles. And he was able to obtain permission from his publisher to put those articles up in the files section of our Yahoo group. So for those of you that are interested, he's the author of an article, What You Need to Know About the PMP, which is very helpful to those that are studying for the PMP exam, and several other articles as well. So we've got a lot of exciting things under our belt. I guess while I'm mentioning resources, Dina, I thank you for joining us on our call. Dina Henry Scott is the leader of the podcast called Controlling Chaos, which is an interesting name for a podcast. Actually, Dina, in 2002, I spoke at one of the PMI seminars at a symposium on the topic of controlling chaos. I didn't use that exact same topic, but it was about controlling chaos. And I did use the word chaos in the title. So, Dina, welcome to the call.
Well, thank you, Henry. I'm glad that I was finally able to get on a call with you.
Yes, it's very exciting to have you. I don't know if people on the call know you, but for those that listen to your podcast, I know it's one of the most popular ones for project management. And I wanted to mention, I didn't know you were going to be on the call, so if your face turns red when I say this, we won't be able to see it. But Dina had an episode 31 that was just published recently. It was called Reengineer Your Brand. And although I've got to say that all of Dina's podcasts are very high quality and she covers some great project management topics, I found this one to be particularly interesting to me because she talked about reengineering her brand and how her coach helped her through this process. And it was a good podcast because, just as you said, Dina, you kind of turned things around, and instead of you interviewing somebody else, you were the one being interviewed.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was a podcast that Dot and I had in the works for a while, and to be honest with you, I was a little hesitant to do it. It's always a little nerve-wracking opening yourself up like that, and of course, since I have listeners worldwide, it's like, you know, everybody heard it that listens. And but it was a very positive experience, and I thought it was an important kind of lesson to share with everybody because it turned out really well, and it was a lot of work, and it was very appropriate to the issues that I was having. And it was interesting, Henry, because I received probably more feedback on that one episode than I probably have in the last 10. And
wow.
It seemed to really hit a note with a lot of the listeners that, you know, people were emailing me and leaving me messages letting me know that, oh, my gosh, I'm going through the same problem, or I've had the same problem in the past. I was glad to see that it was a topic that was helpful for people.
Yes, and Dina, why don't you give us just for those that haven't listened to it, could you just give us say a one paragraph description of what that means in, you know, about engineering your brand?
Sure. Well, you know, a brand is most everybody thinks about is, you know, like a brand of a car or, you know, a brand of candy bar or, you know, hotel chain. But everybody has their own personal brand, and it's really just about, you know, who you are. You know, if somebody was to ask, you know, what's Dina all about in, a, you know, 10 seconds or less, that would really be my brand, to describe who I am, what I'm all about, what my work ethic is, how people perceive you. And so it was actually a follow-up discussion to one that I had earlier last year on how to brand yourself in general. A lot of times project managers, if they tend to come from more of a technical background, didn't have a real chance to hone maybe their personal skills, their soft skills, and they're so focused on the technicalities of how to manage a project, you know, how to build a schedule well in Microsoft Project, how to do great status reports, how to, you know, make sure that you're getting, you know, the best out of all your people in terms of getting their statuses, keeping them on track, that a lot of times people kind of forget about the fact that you have to market yourself as a project manager, whether you're an employee in a company or you're a contractor. There's a lot of PMs out there that are contractors. And every time you get a new gig at a new company, you have to sell your brand. You have to sell who you are, so that people know who you are and what you're all about and how you're going to conduct business. And so a lot of people don't think about that. And what ends up happening is that if you're not thinking about it and you're not focusing on it, everybody else is thinking about it. And they're also looking at you, and they don't know who you are. They don't know what you're all about. And sometimes misperceptions can be built if you don't pay attention to that. And it's all about, you know, the people being people savvy, being politically savvy, understanding and seeing who you are and how you do business from the eyes of other people. And so really thinking about, you know, being able to describe who you are and live that every day that you're at work. So, but what ends up happening is sometimes your brand can get a little off kilter. If you, in my particular case, I had, you know, a couple of issues with a couple of people that were very influential in the company, but I rubbed them the wrong way. I laugh a lot, but I'm also very direct sometimes. I'm pretty straightforward, very cut and dry, and I wasn't communicating effectively with these people. And what ended up happening is they were perceiving me in a way that wasn't effective for me to be able to do my job, and it was starting to affect the assignments I was getting. So it wasn't just that a couple people didn't like me, it was the fact that it was actually starting to affect my work. And when it did start to affect my work, I took notice of that, and I said, okay, I need to stop and really think about and look at what's going on. And that's what started me down this path of reengineering my brand.
Wow. Yep, that's a good synopsis of the podcast that I listened to.
Oh, good.
Very
well,
true.
It's kind of touchy-feely, you know. It's not something that I really wanted to do.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, but it was something that was necessary, and it was a good process for me to go through, and that's why I felt that it might be helpful for other people, because PMs don't tend to be real touchy feely, and but I wanted people to know that, you know, hey, you really got to pay attention to this whether you like it or not.
Right. Yeah. And actually, Dina, it's hard to believe that about you, that you would rub somebody the wrong way.
Oh, well, thanks. You've never been on one of my projects, Henry. Yeah, they have all sorts of little nicknames for me at work.
Now, it's funny, though. I mean, what George was talking about before, at the local chapter meeting the other night, we had a speaker talk about left and right brain and how a lot of what project managers do is very, and the PMBOK itself is very concentrated on the left brain functions.
Yeah.
You know, as you said, you know, the financial and working through the details and that type of thing, when actually it's very valuable to project managers to put some emphasis on those right brain functions, the soft skills, as we call them. And it was a very effective presentation.
Yeah, I think that I'm starting to see that more and more in the topics, the workshops, the seminars, that PMI is sponsoring, whether it's, you know, at their global symposiums or even just at the local chapter level. It's, you know, it's important for PMs to have those technical skills, especially if you're somebody who's managing a very large project, because there's going to be a lot of budgeting and schedule responsibilities. But if you had to choose between the two, whether, you know, you've got great people skills and you have that intuitive knowledge of how to communicate with people in the right way so they can hear your message, versus you being able to manipulate Microsoft Project every which way to Sunday, you're going to be a lot more successful if you have the people skills.
Very true, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the being a leader, and I was talking to a project manager this morning that I met there at the chapter meeting the other night, and he made a statement that kind of stuck with me about how important soft skills were. And of course, he has a background in sales. So one of the things he said to me is, all of life is a presentation.
Mm.
And that kind of ties in with what you're saying about building your brand.
Yeah.
So I do encourage everybody to listen to that podcast that Dina put out. That's episode 31. And the other thing that I wanted to mention, too, is Cornelius Fitchner. He is also a PMP, just like Dina. He has a podcast called thepmpodcast.com, and he also has a pmprepcast.com. Both of them have websites. But in his PM podcast, episode 64, he was talking about more things, again, on the left brain side, more of the task-oriented things that we do as project managers. And it was about avoiding communication chaos, using the communications plan as a strategic tool. And that was very informative, too. So I would encourage everybody on the call, if you have the time, you can listen into these podcasts. You don't have to have a special MP3 player. You can listen in just using your computer. I know several people that listen to them in their offices after hours or on the weekends at home and that type of thing. Some people that have MP3 players will listen to them in their car or as they travel to work or commute. So let's take the time now to get into our theme. Our theme for this evening is managing expectations. And I wanted to start with a story. And actually, this is a story from the Bible where Jesus told the story about a father that had two sons. And one son, he asked both his sons if they would help him in the field, and one said, yes, I'll help. And the other one said, no, I won't. And the first son, even though he said he'd help, didn't really help out. And the other son that said that he couldn't help showed up and did a lot of work. And the Lord asked, which one of these sons is the better of the two sons? And everybody asked, well, the one that said that they wouldn't help, and then they did, because he was the one that really delivered. So, I mean, that's a simple story, and that story's been around for a few thousand years, and yet today we still have trying to manage expectations. So I wanted to just give a little idea, a little background of my lessons learned. What I found was I had a project at one point where I was trying to make the client, the stakeholder, happy, and they were very putting a lot of pressure on us to get things done very quickly, and I would try my best to try to, you know, work with the, in my case, I work with software development, so I worked with a lot of the developers and tried to hone my estimates to be as you know, close to the, you know, right on as we could, and squeeze out every little drop that we could out of our estimates. And then when it came time to do the project and to actually do the work, you know, I watched over the resources like a hawk, and, you know, tried to work things out so that we can squeeze every bit of effort we could out and try to make that date that I had promised to them. And invariably something would come up, or a risk of one kind or another would rear its ugly head, and all of a sudden we'd be finding out that, oh boy, we only have 3 days to make the deadline, and we did have a little extra room in there, maybe a day or two, but it doesn't look like we're going to be able to get this done and get the testing done that we're hoping for. So a lot of times the testing would be the one that would be sacrificed at the end before we had to make the delivery And as a result, we weren't turning out as good quality product as we had hoped. So what I learned from that was that when I, first of all, when I get estimates from folks, and one of the principles of project management is to have the people that are doing the work to also do the estimates. It helps them to have ownership in that estimate. And what I found was that when they gave me estimates, I always added a little margin in there. And then the other thing too is that I would also tell the stakeholder, the client in this case, you know, gee, we're going to need some extra time to make sure we test this really well. And I put a good buffer in there so that I knew that we would have some extra time in there to try to make that date. So that's my lessons learned about managing expectations. But I think that the other thing that we need to think about is not only managing the expectations of our shareholders, but I think we also have to think about managing the expectations of our team, the people that are doing the work on the project. And I would like to see if anybody out there has any lesson learned that they could share. Anybody want to chime in? It's always difficult to be the first person. You can push 6 on your phone to mute and unmute your phone. Somebody out there want to share a lessons learned that they've had about managing expectations?
Well, at the risk of it being a Dina and a Henry show tonight, I can chime in if you'd like.
Yes, please do, Dina.
Okay. Well, you know, that's probably one of the biggest problems that I personally face as well in my projects at work. I usually work on larger strategic projects, and so I tend to have a lot of different stakeholders. And even though on our projects we tend to have just one sponsor identified, we really do have problems with all the stakeholders thinking that they're sponsors. So you tend to have a lot of different competing viewpoints and expectations and on the projects. And I tend to over-communicate more so than under-communicate on my projects, just because you hear the old adage, you know, people have to hear the same message 3 or 4 times before they're actually hearing it and absorbing it. And, you know, I find that face-to-face communication and walking through with visuals on really what's going on and what to expect, and having a little bit of managerial courage and stepping up and not just yesing your people to death when they tell you that they need something by a certain time. Because as PMs, to me, it's, you know, we have to have the art of knowing how to question without making people angry or having them feel like you're judging what they're saying. But you really need to understand why they seem to think they need to have something by a certain date or have to have something a certain size. And I spend a lot of time communicating with folks. I ask a lot of questions. I reiterate a lot of things. I try to keep a consistent message from time, you know, from each time that I'm meeting with people, whether it's in a group or individually, because that consistency of message is really important. And just, you know, basically being able to walk your talk. You know, if you let people know that this is really something that's going to happen, and, you know, you've built this, like you said, Henry, a buffer into your schedule or whatever you want to call it in your own organization, but deliver, you know, on your commitments. And don't commit unless you know that your team can do it. And that's, again, going back to the team and working with them. It's a lot of work, you know. It just takes a lot of time and a lot of communication to make sure that everybody's on the same page. You know, putting something in a Microsoft project schedule and sending it out to people on email saying, you know, let me know if you have any questions, just isn't going to do it. And so people are going to read all their own expectations into that information unless you're being extremely clear with them. So.
Yes, that's very true. You made the comment that you over communicate. That's an interesting comment. I know one of my presentations one time, I had put together an outline and I had somebody take a look at it and they said to me, "Don't use the word over communicate. Use the word effectively communicate."
That's right. In order for it to be effective, you have to over communicate.
Yes, and I don't know if it's possible to ever over-communicate. I don't know, but I guess sometimes when we go shopping at the local mall and we hear everybody talking at once or something, or if we go to a local fun spot and hear everybody talking at once, maybe that's over communication. But I don't know if it's a project to over communicate.
I think it depends on what you're actually communicating.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And you mentioned something else, Dina. I know that you're going for your master's degree, and
yes,
I hope that's going very well. But one of the things that I always think about when you said about going around and face-to-face communication, when you can do that, I mean, not always can you do that when you're managing global teams, but when you can do it, I always call that your MBWA, your managing by walking around.
That's right.
I may not be working on my master's degree, but I can get my MBWA.
Well, sometimes I think that's probably the better degree, Henry.
The other thing that I wanted to mention, too, that you made me think about, Dina, that comes along with managing expectations, is what do you do when you come to a partner project where, you know, let's say that you've got a plan there that shows maybe another month's worth of work to do, and you're managing the plan, and you get to the point where somebody comes up to you and you find out that something has gone totally awry, and there's no way that you're going to make that date, but you know about it now, or maybe you're not going to make your budget, and you know about it now. You know, I think part of managing expectations is taking the time to be honest with your stakeholders at the time that you find out about this issue that's been raised. I know several people that have been involved in project management that struggle with this, and they tend to feel as though, you know, maybe if I hide this or sweep it under the carpet, maybe I can get it fixed before it gets to the point at which, you know, it's really going to, where the stakeholders are really going to find out that I either overspent the budget or I've missed the deadline. You know, maybe I can get it fixed in the meantime. But I found that it's always best to try to be as honest. Again, it gets back to integrity, to be honest with your client or your stakeholders and say, you know, something came up. It's an extra 2 weeks worth of work or an extra 2 months, whatever it is. It's going to push out our deadline, or it's going to cause an issue with our budget or cause a problem with quality. It's better to be honest with them then and tell them what your plan is. Here's my plan to try to address this issue. Now, hopefully, a good project manager would have thought about this issue ahead of time and had it in his risk plan or her risk plan and had a mitigation to take care of that risk. But sometimes we can't anticipate every single issue that will come up. And when we do, I found as though it's always best to try to be honest with other people. Does anybody else have any other lessons learned that they've found that they would like to chime in with?
I've got something that was spurred. This is George. The critical success factors came into my mind as being extremely important. And say you have a customer, the government or whoever, that has a problem, and they bring, say, a consultant in to look at it, and they may not have the scope of the project thought out very well. So it's up to us as a PM to come in, and we've got to make sure that we've clarified the scope and then tell them the critical success factors that we see. If you want this result, well, these are the critical things that have to happen. So that's what I was spurred to.
Yes, that's a very good point, George. You know, at one time I worked in a project management office, and another time I worked as a project manager that oversaw several projects. And on one of the projects, I had a project manager, and actually, I always try to learn something from somebody else. And one of the things that I learned from her was that, of course, we would have weekly status reports and meetings with the stakeholders every week where we would go over the status of the project. And this was a very difficult project. It had a fixed deadline that was moved ahead by, I would say, a good 25% to 30% of the project needed to be, of the time for the project needed to be cut off at the end to get something to market in time. It was a very difficult project. We did something called fast tracking, which fast tracking is probably another topic for another call. But it added a lot of risk to the project, and it was a very difficult, stressful project, and I had to help her out a lot because we almost needed, it was almost like we needed two project managers on that project because there were so many issues. And one of the things I noticed from her is that she would always take the time, I think we had our meetings on Monday morning, she would take the time on Fridays to call each of the stakeholders that had responsibility for the different areas of the project. And she would call them up and she would say, you know, we've got these two issues, and here's how I'm going to handle them. I'm going to do this, this, and this, and I hope that that matches your expectations, and I hope that something that you agree with me would be effective in tackling this issue. She would call up those stakeholders and talk to each of them on Friday. So they had an idea over the weekend of what was going to be happening in the meeting. And when it came to the meeting on Monday morning, she had already talked to all of the stakeholders. And when she brought up these issues that probably would have caused a few explosions to go off, she would bring up these issues, and I would be on the phone. And I always wondered, how can she be bringing up these gigantic issues and the stakeholders just, they say, yeah, that's fine. We think you're handling that well. And nobody got excited, you know, and before she came on board, we had a lot of issues, people getting very excited. And I always wondered how she did it. And I talked to her about it, and she told me how she would take the time before it came to the status meeting to talk about these big issues with the stakeholders and give them a comfort level. And I think that's part of managing expectations, too, is again, I guess that gets back to what I said before. When you have an issue, talk to the stakeholders about it when it occurs and tell them what your plan is to resolve it. So that was another lesson that I learned, too, from someone else. Does anybody else have one to share on the call? Maybe this topic is not as easy one as we thought it was.
Well, it isn't. It's a very complicated topic because there's so many different moving parts to it.
That's right.
And this is, I think, one of the topics that kind of falls under the category of the art of project management.
Yes.
These are the type of things that learning all the things that the PMBOK tells you to keep an eye on is not going to help your situation because you're dealing with people.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is also where just having experience and time in the trenches is what helps. It becomes instinctual, you know, as you've worked with projects and with various people, you start to learn and just kind of feel your way for it. It's like typing or driving after a while. You know, you don't really think about how you're doing it, but you're just doing it really well, and it's instinctual.
Right.
Everybody does it a little bit different.
Right. Yes, there's different ways to get it done. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about, too, is managing expectations of your team. You know, sometimes your team has certain expectations of what's going to happen for the project and that type of thing. And sometimes it's good to take the time to talk through things with your team before they happen as well, so that your team is ready for something that might be coming down the road. I can think of something specific, but I could share another lessons learned, but I want to give somebody else a chance if somebody else has any ideas along those lines.
Well, I kind of have something that's not so positive, though, and this is Cedric from Atlanta.
Go ahead, Cedric.
I've kind of dealt with quite a few projects with a couple of companies where a lot of things were sold or told to the customer or client prior to that project getting to me. So expectations were already set, very unrealistic expectations were already set. And it was very difficult to try to change those expectations once they've already been set. If a customer feels like something is, say software development, something is already built, but it's really not, and you're kind of doing it on the fly, but they've been promised all this stuff and promised all this. You know, the one person who takes the blame is the PM, always. So I guess at the risk of just not lying to customers, you just have to bit by bit, piece by piece, build up some wins, is kind of what I call them, just one win at a time until they halfway feel confident that what you're saying you're going to do, even if what was told to them was not always the case. So just my little take on it.
Cedric, have you had situations like that when, you know, you start managing the project and you find out something, like you said, some unrealistic expectations, maybe something more as far as lower cost or more scope or whatever is promised to the customer? And how do you usually handle that? Do you usually talk to them about it early on, or how do you usually handle that?
Well, honestly, I've kind of made a few mistakes in it. I have tried the approach of, you know, being honest with the customer, and that really wasn't the right approach either. According to, I guess, one of the executives or a couple of the executives, and I've tried the approach of just trying to meet those expectations, even though I knew they were not going to be met. And I guess it just depends on who the stakeholders are. And I guess once you have a good feel for who they are and what they expect, you kind of go from there. It's not going to be an easy situation to fix, but over-communication, I think I've heard that. That helps. Just try to communicate as much as possible and build up confidence.
Yes, I know what you're saying about sometimes if you're overly honest, you'll sometimes irritate the stakeholders even more. I did have a situation where I had something similar going on where the stakeholder had very high expectations when I started being involved in a project. I had taken it over from someone else. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we did at one point was I talked to some of the executives on in my organization and asked them if they could talk with the executives in the other organization to try to level set expectations a little bit, because the expectations were way too high. And when the executives in my organization talked to theirs, it really improved things a lot. It improved the relationship between me and my counterpart in the other organization. It really helped a lot. So, you know, sometimes honesty, you know, depends on, again, it depends on the stakeholder, as you mentioned, Cedric, but it also depends on, you know, how much can they take at one time, and should you be brutally honest, or should you take your time and release the information slowly, or get some help from some senior management sometimes?
Right.
That's a very good point.
Henry, this is David. I've got an example of what happens when you don't set expectations correctly.
Okay, why don't you share that with us? There's a lesson learned.
with one of my previous companies, luckily this wasn't my project, but they were doing for a client that had global sites in about 10 countries. They did a desktop standardization project where they set a standard desktop environment and went around to, you know, these are small offices, maybe with 10 PCs in each office, but they basically sent a couple of people all over the world setting this environment up. And after they completed the project, one of the senior managers at this customer looked at the desktop environment and said, "This isn't what I wanted. This isn't what we want our environment to be like." And because we hadn't set the expectation with the customer or got any approval that this is the correct thing to do, we wound up having to redo that whole project for free.
Ooh, ouch.
So,
wow.
You know, that's, to me, a pretty good example. If you know, it's something as simple as that. You know, you would have thought that, you know, having done this so many times, that somebody would have spoke up somewhere, but nobody actually, with the customer, actually had approved that environment and said, yeah, this is what we want installed on the PCs. We didn't get any signage or anything from the customer saying, yeah, this is acceptable. And then after we got done with the project, the customer wasn't happy.
Wow, yes, I've had similar situations. I had one where I was working with a vendor, and they promised a system that could supposedly do a very complicated task that we needed done. And we brought this vendor in, and they gathered requirements. It was for a hardware system, actually. It wasn't really in the IT area, but it was a hardware system that we were installing in a few of our buildings. And it was actually doing labor capture, you know, time and labor. And they told us that it could do the special function that we needed to be able to do. And they worked on it for several months, and they kept flipping their deadlines, and finally got to the point where it bordered on litigation. I mean, I think it was probably settled before it got to that point, but it was bordering on litigation because they had promised something that they couldn't do. I mean, that I couldn't imagine being the project manager on that project. That was a very tough one. They ended up basically doing something similar. They gave us a lot of stuff for free that, you know, usually they would have been paid for. So, yes, I mean, sometimes things can backfire on you. And one of the things that I was going to mention before about managing expectations with your team is that every once in a while you get to the point in your project where you can see it coming. You know, you could see that maybe the budget's not running right, or that the estimates were way too low, or maybe some issues come up that's going to cause extra work to have to be done on the project, and it's time to talk to the people on the project about, you know, what can we do to make up the time, or what can we do to make up the budget. And sometimes you just have to ask people to work overtime. And I found that, in a way, that's managing expectations too. You have to talk to the resources on your project and tell them, look, we've got this issue. We still have to make our date. We still have to make this budget work, whatever it is. We still have to get the quality up to where it needs to be. And you just have to sit down and talk to them and say, you know, I got the idea that we could work overtime to make this up, but I'm open to suggestions. Is there something I can do to try to, you know, make this easier for you? Is there some way that I could facilitate making your work go faster or making you work more efficiently? Is there something that I can help out along those lines? I've told people on my projects before, my preference is that we can all leave and go home at 5 o'clock. That's what I shoot for, and that's what I'd like to see everybody be able to do. I feel that it's more important for them to be spending time with their family than spending an extra 6 or 7 hours at work. So, you know, I'm willing to involve the team in that, and sometimes the team appreciates the fact that I involve them in trying to come up with a solution to whatever the issues are. But sometimes you just have to manage those expectations too and tell people, you know, if we get into a crunch period and, you know, the estimates that you gave me, you know, I've added buffer to them, but if we're not going to make it, I'm going to need you to have to put in the extra hours so we can make the schedule. And I think people appreciate when you tell them in advance what the story is instead of springing it on them at the last minute. Anybody else have any other comments out there on managing expectations? I know that usually we have a career segment, and tonight Allison Maltese was supposed to share with us about how difficult is consulting compared to a permanent position, and what are the differences, and how to manage your expectations with a job search. But Allison took ill just this morning and sent me an email, and she's not able to join us. And I know that Rod Cologne had said that he may be able to join us this evening. I don't know if he's on the line or not. Are you here, Rod? Okay, well, I'm going to mention a few other things about resources that I want to mention. And one of them is about Jim Blalock. He's a PMP. He was the speaker on our October 2006 conference call. He and Dr. Rudd McGarry authored a book. It's called Project Management Best Practices A through Z, and it's a very good book. I have a copy of it, and I found some of the articles in there very interesting. Basically, what they do is it's almost like a glossary or an encyclopedia, I guess is how I would better describe it. It's a book that has project management topics filed alphabetically, and then they give some good background about some of the lessons learned that they've learned around those topics. So Jim Blalock is contributing the proceeds from that book to the widow of his co-author, and he's offering a special price to those that are in our group. If you're interested, please contact us via the Contact Us link on our homepage. And I'd also like to mention, I mentioned this last month, if anybody's looking for a graphic designer, the person, Chris, a good member of our group that designed our logo, he's involved in web design, usability evaluations, marketing, and branding and graphic design, and he's available to help out your organization. If you're interested, please contact us via the Contact Us link. At this time, I'd like to open the call to anybody else that would like to share one last lesson learned along the lines of our subject, but I want to throw out one other idea. One of the things that I had wanted to do for the topic for this evening is to talk about humor in project management. Now, Dina, I know that you always interject humor in everything you do, but I was surprised that a lot of project managers got back to me and said, there is no humor in project management. But I think there is. So, you know, if anybody has a little comment that they'd like to share along those lines or on our topic, I'd be happy to hear it. Okay, at this time, I'd like to just mention that we are recording this portion of the conversation, and we're going to be finishing our recorded portion in a few moments. At that time, we're going to open it up to a networking segment, so please stay on the call. I want to thank you all for joining us this evening, and I want to say thank you to those that participated in the call, Dina and David and George and Cedric. I especially want to give a word of congratulations to David on passing his exam. I want to say thank you to freeconferencecall.com for supplying the call, and I want to thank you all for listening in. God bless you all, and until next time, keep on learning.
Please join us for a future conference call. We currently have several calls a month. Join our Yahoo group for more information about our calls and information to further your project management career. Membership is free. Details are at pmlessonslearned.com. We hope you'll continue to listen into our podcasts and tell others about our podcasts and our group. PMLessonsLearned.com. We're all about project managers helping project managers. And until next time, keep on learning.
This has been a PM Lessons Learned podcast. Project managers helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Come join our group. Visit our website at PMLessonsLearned.com. Till next time, keep on learning.